to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
So, Ken, thank you so much for being here on the edge with me and my brains. The spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Today, brains, is no different than any other day on the edge. We are going to have a very spirited conversation about the COVID-19 vaccine. Do we take it? Don't we take it? Why Black folks and brown folks and Asian folks are afraid to take it? Why should we trust it? And we have a person that is very, very well-versed in the pharmaceutical industry. He does a lot of work for data collecting, the checks and balances for vaccines, and providing information to the community at large and keeping record as to the checks and balances of what's going on. So we're going to talk about that in detail. So help me welcome my guest today to the edge, Ken Z. Hi, baby. How are you?
Good, April. How are you?
I can't complain about nothing. Hey, I see that music note on your arm. Do you play an instrument?
Yep, I play the violin.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? My mother goes, I hate that damn fiddle. But you know what? The violin is very sexy. It speaks volumes. A lot of people don't know it. There's a lot of classical violinists, one of them being, I can't think of his name right now. Come on, April. It'll come to me. But anyway, do you have the acrylic one or do you play the wood one? Which one?
I play the acoustic wood one. I had an electric for a little while, but I really prefer the acoustic sound.
Really? What got you into playing the violin?
Very, very typical Asian upbringing. And when I was 7 years old, my mom sat me down and said, okay, you're going to play the violin or the piano. You pick. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Have a choice. So tell us a little bit about who you are. First of all, your nationality.
Sure. I'm glad you asked. I love talking about my nationality. So nationality actually specifically refers to citizenship. And so my current citizenship is USA, and my heritage is on my mom's side, Chinese, Han Dynasty Chinese, and on my dad's side, Eastern European Jewish.
Wow. I bet grandma's was excited about that, huh? That's a blend of cultures, but not only do you blend cultures, you blend thought processes, you blend your life, you blend your spirit. How did you get involved in this type of work that you're doing with pharmaceutical companies?
Sure. It's a really long story. And if you had asked me 5 years ago where I would be, I would definitely not have expected to be here now. And the reason for that is in 2008, I struggled with a chronic infectious disease, had a lot of bad experiences with doctors, and I got very cynical and discouraged with the modern medical system. And I swore to myself that I would never support or ascribe to the conventional healthcare system in any way. I learned a lot, dug a lot, explored a lot because I wanted to get better. And the doctors I had were not helping me. The pharmaceuticals I was being given were not helping me. So I had to find another way for my own survival. And I'm blessed to say that I did. And meanwhile, in that process, I had to really understand my relationship to the healthcare industry that we have here in the USA and worldwide, to the pharmaceutical industry and how that even works to both better our lives and restrict and compromise our lives at the same time, and how we can move past that and overcome that. So in 2018, I got to this place where I had to find a job. And as I looked for jobs, you know, I live in the Boston area, so we're very big in healthcare. We're very big in pharma and biopharma. Those are really, really strong industries over here. And I found that there were a lot of jobs that were healthcare related. And immediately I was put off and my stomach turned and I said, I don't know. I don't want to work for healthcare. Anything but healthcare, please. No, anything but healthcare. And I'm a very spiritual person. I'm a very, you know, out there, unconventional person when it comes to my spirituality. And I do believe that I have a purpose and a calling, and I believed it back then as well. But I had such an aversion to healthcare. I said, well, I know what kind of job I want. I know that I want to be of service. I know that I want to help people and use all of my talents and skills, but please no healthcare. Please no healthcare. That just got turned on its head because I ended up in healthcare. But what ended up drawing me there was I was offered this exceptional opportunity that I just couldn't pass up. And if you remember, if you're into the healthcare world at all, in 2018, there was a merger where CVS Health, the pharmacy chain, acquired Aetna, a large health insurance company. And this merger was historic. Nothing like it had ever come about before. It was very controversial. A lot of people said that it would cause conflict of interest and a lot of bad things, a lot of unfortunate things would happen in the healthcare industry, unfair things, because of a pharmacy chain that also had a provider, a Minute Clinic, the walk-in clinics, they would be owning an insurance provider. So it was new, it was big, it was different, and we all call it historic because it was a really big thing that happened.
It's a trendsetter now, because now with the vaccine, you're going to Walgreens and you're going to Walmart Pharmacy. So they were really on the cutting edge as to setting up a third party that was neutral, that was accessible to people for them to go in and get that. So I want to fast forward a little bit to COVID-19. I tell you 2020 was a hot mess, okay? But I believe, me personally, that this is something that got out of the lab. It's something that they had been working on previously. Yes, you know, you can call it conspiracy theory if you want, but there's no way in the world that I'm going to believe that a nice little Chinese family of four was out at the wet market, got a couple bats, and turned the whole entire world upside down with this raging pandemic that's morphing into different things. I don't believe that. I don't believe some of the scientists that are out there and what they're saying. And that's because I'm a skeptic. I'm a Black American woman, originally of Native American descent and heritage. So I know how we have been used as lab rats before. What turned me off was the first image that I saw was a Black doctor giving it to a Black nurse. Okay, so, you know, monkey see, monkey do. It's not that way. And there's a lot of hesitance, okay, with regards to COVID-19 and this vaccine. Give me a little information on your experience with that and prove me wrong.
I'm not here to prove you wrong, April. So I am really here to help people lean further into their own thought processes, really dissect their own critical thinking. And I know that's kind of a dirty word these days, but I am a proponent of critical thinking on all levels. Me too. But I'm here to help you and everyone else understand what is driving my decisions, what is driving my feelings around this vaccine, and what is ultimately going to drive and make my decision. Because we make decisions based on all kinds of things. We make decisions based on emotions. We make decisions based on logical thought or our understanding of logical thought. We make decisions based on what we see as proof. So a lot of people go to science for that source of proof. We make decisions based on what our authorities and leaders that we trust tell us. A lot of people are going in that direction as well. But I think you speak to something that we cannot avoid in this whole conversation, and that's racial trauma. And that is something that, going from, you know, talking about the origins of the disease and the racism that was behind that, the prejudice against Chinese people that was against that, and all that came up through the pandemic, to this understanding all the way through 2020, people were talking about people in Black communities won't get vaccinated, and this is a problem. How can we gain their trust? How can we gain the trust of not only Black communities, but all communities where people have vaccine hesitancy? And so there were these strategies and tactics created because there are people who say, we want the whole population to get vaccinated. It's critical, so let's do what we can. But I do believe that a lot of these tactics, I'll call them marketing tactics, were created without a full and whole understanding of why that hesitancy was there in the first place. So there is a presumption that you, April, as a Black person, if you know, you see other Black people getting the vaccine, and especially in the beginning, then maybe that will help you gain trust. But what you, I'm hearing you respond to that as you are seeing it as a ploy, you are seeing the intention behind it, and it's an intention that's created without the listening, without a full understanding of the trauma, the medical trauma, that the systemic and institutional medical trauma that is behind why people don't trust the vaccine, and specifically why Black people don't trust it, exactly. Which is not something to speak to, but I think that human distrust.
And even in our own community, you know, and I'm very, very active in the community. I'm not seeing as much, I'm seeing some, but I'm not seeing as much conversation in the Black churches. You know, I don't remember the last time I seen a blood drive at a Black church. I don't remember us going in for a blood marrow testing, giving a kidney or a liver transplant, please. Donating organs when we die. That's just not something culturally we do. And so again, we are at a disadvantage if we are not a part of the process, we become a part of the problem. DNA is different. You know, people want to say we're all the same. We're not all the same brains, newsflash, okay? And that's not a disparaging thing. It's a reality. But again, you got to slice and dice. I mean, everybody's not a piece of lemon meringue pie. You know, you got some peach cobbler over here on the side too. So let's talk a little bit about the work that you actually do with regards to going out, outreaching, and educating people.
Yeah, so I think primarily my community locally is in holistic health, you know, because I had my own journey with pursuing alternative forms of healthcare. I've built a lot of connections in the community of practitioners that believe in this and practice it and have really developed a professional discipline around delivering alternative forms of healthcare. So this could be anything from herbal medicine to energy work to even massage, chiropractic. There are lots of vitamin supplements and, you know, the broadness of what we know as health and wellness. I am hooked into that community and I have these dialogues within that community because I've really noticed that with all the controversy that has come up around COVID, this community has split right down the middle. We've got people who are thinking in their hearts, they're like, well, I want to get out of this pandemic and I take it seriously and we should be open to the vaccine and we should think about it and not fear it. And then we have the people that say, I don't trust it at all. And all the fear has been unleashed. All of that, you know, trauma that's been building up over the years, knowing that not everybody in the medical establishment has our best interests at heart. Like, there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of fraud. There's a lot of for-profit interest that harms people and patients. And we hooked into that. And there are leaders in the community that, you know, that a lot of folks have chosen to follow because they are critical of the medical system. But with that criticism and the critique, I feel like a lot of people have kind of applied the philosophy they're trying to get away from, meaning we have to get away from blind trust of leadership and establishment. We need to think for ourselves. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of people running away from that and believing people who may be telling some truth. They're vaccine critical. I'll put it out there. A lot. I believe I'll call them anti-vaccine. I know it's a dirty word, but I think they're basically talking about the dangers and risks involved with vaccines in general. They're critically looking at things like vaccine injury, which is a real experience. And they are drawing attention to all the dangers that could possibly result from vaccination and a lot of other elements of the medical model that we know.
Well, you know, we haven't seen this much kerfuffle since the AIDS epidemic, which people, once they got down to the core, they really found out that it was being transmitted a certain type of way, that, you know, you couldn't breathe on somebody and contract HIV. So people are panic-stricken. And again, there's a lot of noise out there in the world. And so what I want to know a little bit about is, you know, the data, the checks and balances, you know, what are they doing? Okay, so when you go in and you get your vaccination, you fill out a questionnaire. And then, you know, is there a 6-month follow-up, 7-month follow-up? What is it that they are collecting? What sort of data are they looking at? Are they looking at your ethnicity? Are they looking at your age, your risk factor? I know all of that is a compiling, but really, what are they looking at when they're trying to find out if this is working?
Right. So we've had clinical trials, right? We've had clinical trials to show antibodies.
Not a long term, you know, it was rushed.
Exactly.
It was rushed.
And that's something we have to accept with all the rigor and science that we have. We have to accept and openly talk about the fact that we can't know everything and we can't know the long term yet because it simply hasn't been enough time. So we're battling this choice between, do we go ahead and aggressively try to vaccinate everybody because we need to get out of the pandemic and that's critical? Or do we wait and see what happens with some people before we can confidently say it's okay for the whole population? And that is the tug, that is the push and pull and the tension that we're in. We are right now in that tension, right? Because President Biden is advocating for everyone to get vaccinated. He is advocating for us to move out of the pandemic, and being vaccinated is critical for that to happen. And meanwhile, we have lots of people that are looking at what's happening and they're concerned. They're concerned. And I don't think that they're wrong to be concerned because we simply don't know. We simply don't know what happens long term. We have evidence to suggest certain things.
Right.
We have, you know, we have like ideas, we have inklings, we have a lot of clues, we have information to go on, but each person's trust of that information and how they will apply it to themselves and those they care for is going to be unique to them.
And also, let's take into consideration the messaging or lack of messaging from the previous administration. They really turned this into a political football. Don't do this. You know, brains, what you have to understand is that it didn't start out trying to strip you of your civil liberties, you know, forcing you to wear a mask. It's just like a disruptive child. You have to isolate them. You have to put them in timeout and figure out what's going on and come up with a plan. Unfortunately, it took a year, but we're talking about a billion people. No, more than that, billions of people, because this was worldwide. Okay, and everybody had their own take on it. And we have all been affected by it. And to me, as you talked about being a spiritual individual, this is the perfect pause. This is God with a megaphone saying, sit your ass down and pay attention to what I'm trying to tell you. Try to be a more compassionate human being. Do some introspective work. And since you're not paying attention, let me show you what I can do. People are dying still at record numbers. And it's odd because I'm not seeing the numbers projected on the television as they once were. We're talking about the people that are vaccinated, but we're not talking about the people that are dying. And another thing I find very interesting. Oh, let's give it to someone, forgive me, seniors, on their way out, 75, 80. You know, my mother is 91 and she's not down with it because she feels that the risk outweighs the reward. Me, I've made a personal decision. I'm going to go ahead and get my vaccine. I have a preference of which one I want to take. And I'm going to ask you a little bit about that because now there's three. You know, there's the Pfizer, there's the Moderna, and now there's the Johnson & Johnson. Also, I'm wondering if this is going to be like the flu shot, which we don't know yet. Is this something we're going to have to be injected with every year? Can you help me with something?
Right. Yeah, I can talk a little bit about that. And of course, I encourage everybody to go out and look up this information, right? Never just trust one source. But from what we know so far, we've got the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. Those are both mRNA vaccines, and those are both two-dose vaccines. After the two doses, the end result is as we've been presented, it's pretty high, right? It's in the 90s, right? In the 90%. Right. It's pretty much good against disease, right? Not necessarily against infection, but against
and I hate disease. To interrupt you right in the middle, but when you get to that point, sure. I have to catch up with my thought process.
Yeah.
Okay. When you say 90%, This is not prevention brains. This is protection, okay? This is like a condom. You're putting it on for protection because, again, people can still contract. You still got 10%. Do we still wear a mask? I'm not really sure what this vaccine is supposed to be doing. Explain that to me first.
Clinical trials showed protection against disease, right? Not against infection, which means that you can still get infected with the virus and you can still carry the virus within your body, which we believe means that it can still be transmitted from person to person. Even if you're vaccinated, you could still take it, carry it, you could still get the virus, carry it, and give it to someone else. So it doesn't protect people around you necessarily, but it may protect people around you because it protects, as shown in the clinical trial, it was shown to protect against disease manifestation, getting symptoms, right? If you have symptoms, you're coughing, you're sneezing, you're giving off fluids that increase the transmission possibility. So there's a couple of layers to discern between. There's getting the virus in your body itself. There's do you get sick from the virus? And then do you transmit that virus or that sickness to other people? So those are different questions, right? And you have to really separate those three questions and ask about each one. So when we talk about protection, the 95% protection is shown in the trials for the Moderna vaccine, for example, that's against disease. It's not against getting the virus in your body, right? Anyone can get the virus in their body, but it's against the manifestation of disease. And it's not against the ability to carry it, except in the idea that if you don't have symptoms, you're less likely to transmit through the fluids that come out of you. So that's my understanding, right? I work in the scientific community and in the healthcare community. That's the understanding I've received of it. And in that way, you know, the Moderna vaccine, I believe, is superior because with the first shot, you get more protection than in the first shot of the Pfizer vaccine. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, there's an advantage in that there's only one vaccine that you have to take. You don't have to take two. But the efficacy, the protection is around, I want to say, 70%. So it's a bit lower, but it's easier because you only have to take one. Now, the concern with all three of these is you've got the experts in the field saying that inevitably we're going to need a booster on all of them. And that's because of variation and mutation in the virus. So you're asking this question, is it going to be like the flu shot? I think that's the direction that we believe this to be going in, which I think, you know, we have to really talk about and think about because, you know, we want to be able to say, oh, I got my vaccine fully protected. I can breathe. I can relax. But the idea of having to get a booster to cover for, say, the South Africa variant, because the original vaccine didn't protect against that, hardly at all. And then we think, well, what about future variants that we don't know about yet because they haven't happened or been detected yet? So we can't necessarily keep ahead of everything that's going on in the future, but we do know influenza mutates every year. There are different variants of influenza every year. And we can't predict what all of them are going to be. You know, the manufacturers of the vaccines do their best to try to put in there what they have detected and what they believe is going to be prevalent. But the flu shot is not that effective. And also, if you're into getting the flu shot, you have to get it every year.
I'm not into any injection of no dead virus or nothing. What are they injecting in us, Ken?
I'm going to stick to talking about the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines in this discussion. Johnson & Johnson, if you want to know, you can get into that later. But for now, I'm going to talk about mRNA because that's like a really hot topic and a lot of people are really afraid of it because it's so new. So mRNA is, I'll try to make this basic in general and not get too detailed, but messenger RNA, we have DNA in our cells, right? We have a double helix. It's a spiral. We have two elements to our DNA. RNA is just one of those. So a virus, which, you know, we say is like half alive and half not, it only has RNA. It only has one single strand. And RNA is a way that cells can communicate within themselves. So viruses might put a strand of RNA into our cells to tell ourselves, instruct ourselves to reproduce that virus, make copies of that virus. And this vaccine is kind of similar to that. So the idea is one strand of mRNA, well, it, enough quantity of it to reach our cells. It's enveloped in a ball of lipids, basically, to keep it whole until it can reach our cells. That mRNA goes attaches onto the cell and gives the cell an instruction to produce something. And that something is called a spike protein. And it's what we consider the critical part of that coronavirus. So our cells, instead of us being given a dead virus or a live attenuated virus like in the vaccines of the past, we are instead given instructions to produce a piece that looks like the virus, the glycoprotein that's inside the coronavirus. So we produce it, and then our body recognizes it as foreign, and we create an immune response to that protein that's not a whole virus. It's just the protein. So it can't hurt us the way that a virus does. That's the idea. And we create the immune response against the glycoprotein, which then we will believe would give us the antibodies we need to respond if we should ever get the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus after that. So it's a very, there has never been an mRNA drug or vaccine on the market. They've been studying it for many years, but it's never been on the market. So that gives a lot of skepticism, you know, out in the community. People are asking questions about it and getting suspicious. People say, you know, can this alter my DNA? And that's not exactly how it works. It does not alter your DNA, but it does give instructions to your cell to do something, which, you know, that can be triggering, right? That can be kind of triggering for someone that has emotions around the idea of somebody else controlling our bodies and telling our bodies what to do. So I want to give light to that.
I'm going to tell you something that I took jokingly, but I believe all these colostomies that people get, I tell them they're sticking a transmitter up your ass when they're doing
that. I mean, they certainly could. We don't know, right?
So they can trace you. You're not down. You don't know what the heck is going on. Okay, so that was a lot of, that's a lot of information. It's a lot to process, but you explained it wonderfully. You explained it simplistically. I want to talk to you a little bit about cultural norms and abnorms. You are very, very boisterous about a lot of wonderful things that you're passionate about, such as I am, on your social media platforms. And you talk a lot about spirituality, inclusion, diversity, and you have a very interesting past, present, and future that you're living through right now. Can you share with my brains a little bit and as much as you want about that? Because I think it's very important to be totally inclusive. And it's very hard because, you know, there's a difference between acceptance and tolerance. And sure. I'll talk to you a little bit about that. Would you mind sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you brought up before that the vaccine has become a political topic because it is. So this is kind of like what makes things a little complex because a couple things about me. First off, I'm an immigrant. I'm biracial. I actually grew up with two parents that ascribed in one way or another to socialism. I grew up with a lot of, we'll call them leftist ideals. I'm also transgender and non-binary, which means that I, as a non-binary person, I don't identify strictly with either male or female. And I've gone through the experience of medical transition. And I believe that anybody who wants to go through that should and can have access to that and deserves to be honored and respected as a human being and be free to live their life however they want without fear of persecution. I believe in social equity. I believe in healing racial trauma, racial injustice. And that is something that is a journey for me that I am in the middle of and will never be complete on. And I believe that for all of us. I believe in resolving inequities of all kinds. I'm not attached to how that happens, but I believe that we should be conscious, be honest, and have open communication and not let ourselves be caught up in the political narratives that try to separate us and divide us and tell us what to think and who to be. We should all be free to have our own beliefs, opinions, and life choices as long as they're not hurting or harming other people excessively. So,
and I agree with that, you know, con. I tell people all the time, you know, they always want to change you, you know. They always want to make you accept. I'm into toleration, you know, And that's a big step. A lot of people don't like the word tolerate, but you know, that's huge for some people. If you don't bother me, you don't have to like, you know, okra. You don't have to put it on your plate. You know, some people don't like blacks. They don't like whites. They don't like gays. But that does not give you the right to disrespect, to dishonor, to hassle, to bully. None of that. You don't have permission to do that. So I think that people really need to speak on that. But explain one term that I don't understand. Non-binary. Okay, now I get it. You know, I get it. You don't want to identify as male or female. I want to know why. And really, what purpose does that serve you and mankind?
Yeah, interesting question. As far as why, I felt this way, I would say, since I was little. And especially when I was a teenager going through puberty, I felt a couple different things. One was I felt, you know, I don't really see myself growing up into a woman. I was born female, so that was the expectation. I don't really see myself growing up into a woman. That doesn't feel right. But, you know, I don't really see myself growing up into a man either. That doesn't quite feel right either. And that's just how I felt. That's just how I felt, honestly. There wasn't a whole lot of space to discuss it. It was a very weird thing to talk about. You know, even in the early 2000s, it was still kind of a weird thing. Being trans was a bigger discussion, and that was something that was more accessible to me. And the other piece that I noticed was that I wanted to change my body. And I didn't want to have the secondary sex characteristics that I was developing as a female and going through puberty and all of that. And I thought about it for a long time. And I decided that I wanted to get surgery and go on hormones. And the only way that I would be able to do that if I went to a doctor was to say, I feel like a man. And that did not feel right to me, but it was something that I felt I had to do to get access. If I went to the doctor and said, I don't feel like either, they would not have signed off on me getting the medical transition that I wanted. So I went through it. It was, you know, I would say it like probably a 10-year process, but it's really a lifelong process because, you know, the hormones are something you take your whole life. But as I progressed, and of course, like lately in the past few years, being non-binary is becoming more and more of a thing. People are expressing that more. They are more open about it. They're using different language around it now. And I thought to myself that, you know, it feels really safe for me to come out as non-binary, and that, you know, I'm very happy with the way my body is now, having gone through medical transition, female to male. But socially, in the way I relate to myself, how I think of myself on the inside, I honestly don't think of myself as a man or a woman. And I think part of it is the social aspects and the stereotypes and the expectations. But I think there's another layer to that, because I think that, you know, expressing yourself as a man or a woman or any gender can be a beautiful thing. And I have a lot of appreciation for masculine and feminine expressions and understandings of gender. But I just personally, and I can't explain this, it's really just a feeling. I personally feel like I'm both, neither, don't really want to participate in that, in the binary of it all. And so I just walk this middle ground. And it's been great.
Now, two questions. You know, you said that your parents had very leftist views. When they woke up and you had this conversation with them, what happened?
It was tough at first, actually. I mean, because, you know, you can have whatever political views you want. You can believe in sovereignty and free choice and free expression and human rights, you know, all day long. But when it's your own child, you start to think, what is going to happen to my child? And I think that was the main concern. My dad said, you know, like, it doesn't seem like being trans is something that's accepted at all. It seems very taboo. I'm just worried that you're not going to find a job. And I'm also worried that you're not going to find somebody to marry and settle down with. So he had those concerns about me. At the same time, he was open to accept it. My mom had her own concerns too and her own feelings about it. So both of my parents kind of went on a journey navigating their own resistance and also coming to some acceptance around, you know, how I live my life. But I think it was a lot of it was tied up in, hey, I'm their child and we want the best for our kids. And we also want to protect our kids from the world. And then we recognize at some point, our kids are going to grow up into adults with their own desires, their own actions, and they're going to be taking risks and getting into some danger. And that's scary for any parent to look at. So I think there was a lot layered on top of that.
But they are they're actively participant in your life, and they've accepted your choice. And, you know, is that working out pretty good?
Well, I think that they kind of had no choice but to accept my choice, because I was doing it without their permission.
All right.
You know, I was right. So it was something that in the beginning, you know, there was tension around, and they weren't totally on board with it, but I went ahead with it anyway. I turned 18. I could do what I want. And eventually, you know, I am where I am now, living 100% as a man, socially and professionally. I do show up as a man because that's, you know, that's where I'm comfortable. And because I really don't want my gender to be a big deal, but I'm coming out more and more as non-binary, and that's a lot of fun. Wow. But also married. I'm married to a beautiful woman named Jenny, and we've been together for a while.
So let's dial back. Okay. So
yeah.
you opt to live your life as a man. You mm-hmm. opt to marry a female.
Yeah.
I'll be 100% with you. Again, I'm still confused.
You are?
Yeah. No, I'm clear on your position, but it's a lot going on, and it's a lot to process. And if I come here, I would be disingenuous if I told you, oh, okay, you know, I'm cool with it. I'm not cool with it. I'm happy for you, because like I said, however you get down, however you live your life, however, I'm heart-centered, okay? That's what I'm looking at. I'm looking beyond the physical. I'm looking into the metaphysical, to the energy, to the spirit, to the heart. That's how we connect. But it's still confusing, and there's going to be a lot of questions in other parents' mind as their children go through this. I had a great education. Someone told me, I said, what is the LGBTQ+? I said, this is the alphabet soup now of the gay community. And a person told me very simple, that your sexuality is between your legs. Your gender is between your ears. And it's in your brain. I totally get that. So what would you say to parents right now that are confused and are struggling with this, to help their children, love their children through the process? Because it's not an automatic mm-hmm. switch. It's not like, okay, this is what my child thinks that they want.
Yeah.
Because of course we don't know, you know, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
And how are you going to explain this at 10, 12, 14 years old, when you haven't had mm-hmm. enough life experience to really decipher what it is? What would you say to parents right now?
This is my number one piece of advice to any parents that have kids that are trans or questioning possibly being trans or non-binary. Feelings are going to come up around your relationship with your child. It's really important to separate out your feelings concerning yourself as a parent and your feelings concerning your child and their life and their well-being. And if you need care, reach out and get support, go to therapy, go to support groups, and get connected in the community and have honest conversations about how you feel with other adults. This is very important, before you go and talk to your kid about your feelings. Okay. Before you go and say something that comes from you but might not have anything to do with them. Because it's going to bring up feelings. Whatever path, you know, that you end up choosing in cooperation with your child, you know, that can be different for everybody. It depends on your unique relationship. But the most important thing is to take care of yourself.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Self-care, because again, that's self-awareness. And then you're able to dial back and look at it objectively.
Right.
God makes no mistakes. As you said, you are a very spiritual individual. And spirituality is not religion. Okay. I look at religion as the roadmap. I look at spirituality as the destination. So don't get it confused, brains. Okay. God makes no mistakes. And we are really the conduit and the vessel used to bring, and the portal to bring life into the world. Everybody comes with its own set of instructions, just like the virus that we're injecting in our bodies, and it is going to attach, and it is going to morph, and it is going to cause a reaction. So what I think is the most important thing is that we love beyond our own understanding, you know, try to do it. You know, I've run across some personal situations that have been a challenge for me, but I don't want to cause any disruption in other people's lives. I don't want to hurt them. I don't want to shun them away from me. So again, I ask questions and I try to be as open as I can. And again, extract my personal emotions because I have my own life to live. Would you agree?
Oh yeah. I think that we all can stand to learn to take better care of ourselves and how we feel. And the more responsibility we can take for our own self-care, the better we can be when it comes to others, taking care of the ones we love and taking care of our community, no matter what kind of life you choose to live.
Exactly. So let's play a quick round of this or that. Tell me.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to give you, you know, two choices, and I want you to respond to the first one that comes to your mind. Black, white.
Black.
Acceptance or tolerance?
Acceptance.
Fight or flight?
Fight.
Dog or cat?
Cat.
Vodka or gin?
Vodka.
Milk or orange juice?
Milk.
Religion or spirituality?
Religion.
Pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine?
Pro-vaccine.
All right.
Then. Hey, you told me to pick one. You told me to pick one.
And I told you to pick one. And what was the first thing that came to your mind? So thank you. Yeah. So much, because a lot of these things, I kind of had a feeling, you know, that, you know, you're a fighter and, you know, you want people to be accepting. It's not always white. Let's go into the black, because you can get white from black, but you cannot get black from white. Okay. I see you being a little catty. Vodka, I agree with you. And milk. Milk is warm and cuddly. I love the fact that you really want to look into the discipline of religion, because it is a set of guidelines and it is important. And you know, everybody has to pick whatever doctrine they want, but know that there is a higher calling on our lives. And I thank you so much for dedicating your time, your energy, and being so open and explaining to us, you know, really what's going on in the world, because this is here to stay. There are a lot of people that are in the closet. There are a lot of people suffering. There are a lot of people being bullied there for, you know, not only their sexuality, but again, with the vaccine. So you have covered a lot. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. I think that you're a wonderful human being. It doesn't matter if you are X, Y, or Z.
Yeah. And I know we didn't really get too far into the vaccine discussion, but part of my purpose is to continue having this conversation with others. So if anybody wants to continue this conversation with me, you can go to vaccineparadox.com and get in touch. And, you know, I will let you know how we can take it from here.
Absolutely. And I'm going to rerun this over again. As we progress, I'd like for you to come back in about 6 months and just kind of, you know, give me some information on some of the data that you've collected. I'm going to be out in the community. I'm talking. I'm going to go and get my vaccine. And I'm telling you, I'm going to let you know. I'll probably send you a private message as to how I felt on the first shot and the second shot. Because Mr. Magnificent got both of them and no problem. He came home, took a nap. He was fine. You know, then I have other people that really, really had, you know, had a bad reaction to the second shot. Each individual is different. Let me ask you this, though, quick before we conclude. What do you feel or what is the data showing about building up on these supplements? You know, a lot of people saying, if I have a bad reaction, I'm taking A, I'm taking C, vitamin C, I'm taking zinc. Is there any data to prove that any of this is working or is helpful?
That's a big question, because when it comes to data, it comes down to which studies are being funded right now. So I will say not that I know of yet. Somebody out there can prove me wrong. I can tell you experientially and anecdotally, I have heard many experiences of traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture being very helpful with vaccine reactions. But again, that is an experiential information that I'm relaying to you. It's not a scientifically endorsed study yet.
Well, I believe in acupuncture, absolutely, and holistic options. But, you know, it's a back and forth. It's a yin and yang between westernized medicine and Eastern philosophy and holistic. You have to make the choice for yourself, brains. But we are here to provide you the information. Again, Ken, please tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want to follow you. Because, again, like I said, you are spitting fire.
I'm excited to spit more fire with you, April.
I love it. I love it. So thank you so much. Wish your wife the best for us. We're going to continue to have this conversation. I'm going to go out after my personal experience and share my personal experience with you here on The Edge, on my platform, as well as all of the other places that I visit. Hopefully I can get back in the churches and community organizations and networking, because we're loosening things up here in California a little bit. And we're just going to forge ahead. So thank you so much for being here on The Edge. I appreciate you and value you.
Thank you, April. I value and appreciate you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, brains.